T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Clint Sterner's out today. Wade Smith, Ron, the show, Hughley in with you today, 4 o'clock hour. We appreciate you for joining us and taking the time to listen to us. We've had a lot of fun with listeners and everybody. It's been good fun. But we got to be honest. A lot of people have been hard on Bill O'Brien. A lot of people have had issues with the moves and the decisions that Bill O'Brien has made. And yes, many of it has been warranted. But I would pose this thought, Wade. We understand what the other side of that can be, is that by the end of the season, they reach a goal of the next step. And the next step to me is the AFC Championship game. If they get to that game or further, many of y'all going to have to deal with Bill O'Brien. Or at least you should be able to have to deal with Bill O'Brien, because he can let you know I was right.
No question about it. Now listen, the way he's put himself in a position right now, he can stand on top of the table and say, I told y'all suckers, like I told each and every one of y'all, you across the street, you at Papa Do's across the street from NRG, I told y'all asses that this was the right moves to make. And now we've made it to AFC Championship game, or now we made it to a Super Bowl. Now we won a Super Bowl. And I'll tell you what, I would say 90% of Texans fans and 90% of the people that are listening right now would be like, hey, I'd be all for it. Because at the end of the day, we want to win. And so I don't care. Like, you'll put your feelings to the side as far as how you got there. But as long as you get there, that's all that matters to a large amount of people. And I'm one of those people. I don't have nothing against Bill O'Brien personally. I don't have nothing against him at all. There's some decisions that he makes that I'd be like, hell yeah. There's certain decisions that he makes and I'm like, what the hell are you doing? But that's normal. You're not going to completely agree with any and everybody. But, hey, can you produce and get the job done? And that's what we're all waiting to see. Can the Texans offense produce and get the job done? Because this team is going to have to be built around the offense. It's going to have to. The offense is going to have to lead the way. That's just the way the league is now. The teams that win Super Bowls or the teams that are the most successful have offenses that dictate and are powerful offenses and put them in a position to win. The defense just needs to be opportunistic and make plays here or there. And I think the Texans got some pieces on their defense. And with Anthony Weaver being the defensive coordinator now, they're gonna scheme it up to where they can be opportunistic and they're going to be more risky. I just want to see it happen. And listen, Bill O'Brien, I'll be the first one there saluting him and telling on the air when I get on the air again after that happened. Listen, Bill O'Brien was right.
I believe
I was wrong about this. I was wrong about that. He was right about this. He was right about that. That's at the end of the day, I want to be able to say that. But I just go off of what I see. I go off of the evidence. And I know what has worked in this league. I've seen it. I've been following the sport of football since I was like 4, and that was like 34 years ago, 35 years ago. Now I just had a birthday. So I've been watching the NFL game for 35 years, and I just haven't seen it work the way that Bill O'Brien is trying to make it work. But if it does, hey, stand on the table and play on, player. You run things. You King Bill for real, and can't nobody tell him nothing.
Because I think a lot of people do feel like he's made some real, if not shaky, questionable, just all the well, just dumb moves. But how about we go through a couple of them?
Okay.
Like, what would you rate, like, in terms of bad moves, poor moves, poor decisions, all right decisions, or things that you look at that are positive. Like, how will, what are the things that he'll be able to stand on the table and let you know that he was right about that many people don't think are right, that he's right about?
Well, you look at the, you'll start with the poor moves. People, the consensus.
Now let's get with those.
We'll start with those first. So the consensus moves that the Texans made that people are like, okay, what are you doing? Why would you do that? Signing Eric Murray to $7 million a year when he hasn't been a starter in this league for any significant period of time, and there's no production that you say, you know what, this guy warrants this type of contract, and to be the starter here, that's an opinion that people say, well, what are we doing there? But if Eric Murray comes out here and balls, if he comes out here and balls, then people are going to be like, man, Bill O'Brien and the coaching staff and the scouting department, they had the foresight to know that this dude, Eric Murray, can come in, he's going to ball, and that's what he ended up doing. So he could stand on the table and say, we were the only ones that thought this, because nobody else in the market was offering that kind of money. Say the same thing about Randall Cobb. Randall Cobb, he comes in here, you know, he's getting paid, I think, $9 million a year. You know, nobody else offered him that kind of money. Yeah. Okay, so if he comes in here and he balls, he has, I don't know, 70-some catches and 900-some yards and 6 or 7 touchdowns, then people going to say, well, damn, Bill was right about that too. Bill O'Brien and the coaching staff and the scouting department over this, I told you, I went on Cobb's going to come here into this offense and play at a level. The biggest one to me,
this is the big one,
is Dave. David Johnson.
Big Dave. I'm a Dave guy, by the way, if you didn't know. I put my flag down for David Johnson. That's my. I'm with him this year.
I love what he did back in 2016.
It's 18 too. Now, he had 1,400 yards and 10 touchdowns from scrimmage, 18-2. If he gave you that this year, he could get on the table and yell it to me. Now, yeah, all right, go ahead. I'll get out your way.
You can make numbers seem any kind of way. I just know he had like 3.6 yards per carry.
If my running backs
was running for 3.6 yards per carry, I don't care how many yards you end up getting.
You know what else,
that's
Wade?
Not good ball.
You know what? He didn't have your ass in front of him. He had deck chairs, lawn chairs, computer chairs in front of him. You remember that Josh Rosen year? Well, oh, God. Andre Smith, the right tackle. I watched him.
Andre Smith
can
run block.
Oh, God. Come on, man. I watched him in a game that year, and I felt sorry for him. He was just getting abused, man. I'm sorry. That group there has got to be something. That man got 1,400 yards of scrimmage with Josh Rosen and that offensive line. So let's not forget about 18, but I'll slow down.
Well, let me ask you this, Joe. Is there any – can you give me examples, and I'm putting you on the spot here, but an example where for 2-3 seasons in a row, a player either didn't produce – or you had to put a caveat on why they didn't produce, and then all of a sudden on that fourth year, they balled out. And I'm not talking about a rookie that came into the league and the first few years he grows into the game. I'm talking about a guy that came out, had an excellent – he had a damn good rookie year, and then the second year he broke out, and then he's fallen off kind of since then and had one, you know, halfway decent year since then, and then all of a sudden they balled out. I think that's – where Bill O'Brien can say, you know what, I saw this happening when nobody else did, and I was willing to take on this $10 million contract when nobody else was, because I knew that this dude had it based off of our scheme and what he could do in our scheme, and that's why he could stand on the table and tell people, I told you so. But, Show, can you give me any examples?
Wait, you know, damn near I can't give you no example that fast. Bridget, can you look up something? No, I want to get to this.
We're going to try it tomorrow. Maybe somebody can text me something. I'll give you to tomorrow to find me some examples, because it just didn't really happen that way in the league, man.
Bridget, come on. Did you hear that description? 713-572-4610. Was that unfair of Wade to put me on the spot? Can you think of a player in the NFL who was good for a year, kind of fell off a little bit, maybe had some injuries, then year three he was okay, but then year four he then came back and was the man, but not a rookie either. Okay. Come in.
I thought you were good, Show. I thought you were good.
What the hell am I going to do with that? It gave me 13 seconds to come up with somebody.
I did put the caveat out there that I'm putting you on the spot.
I'm just saying, I did put you on the spot.
You heard it here first. Show does not know sports.
Does the text line, there are a lot of people who believe that. Does the text line have anybody describing what Wade just said? I don't have any. I don't even know what. I can't. All right, tomorrow, that's my homework. I'll try to find somebody that I'm gonna have to get on the radio.com app when this show is over to listen to that explanation of what I've got to find.
I'll break it down for you again real quickly. Just like this. Listen, find me a guy that had a breakout year. And then the following year he gets hurt or doesn't get hurt, just doesn't produce. I'm just talking about production. You have a breakout season and then you don't produce at the level of what his contract commiserates right now. And then
through and commiserates.
Then he all of a sudden now he makes it happen in year four. Because this will be the fourth year since he had a damn good football season, right? It was in 2016 he had a great season.
You mean, are we going great? Okay. All right. Like, yes, yeah, since 2016 when he was great. 2018, he had 130 less yards than Carlos Hyde did last year, and he had almost 500 yards receiving with 10 touchdowns.
But Carlos Hyde was averaging like 4.5 yards per carry. He was averaging 3.6. That's first downs or not first downs. But that matters. That was just a volume rusher.
They had nothing close to Laramie Tunsil. You know, and you know Larry Fitzgerald, God bless his soul, he's one of the all-time greats. He was leaking a lot of oil by that time. Like, there just wasn't anything else around him. I think that's fair. Well,
I think my overriding point is that more times than not, it's very rare that you see a guy fall off production-wise over a significant period of time and then come back and ball. But that's where Bill O'Brien has that, aha, I told you.
Yeah, he got
like, told you, because if it works, then basically what he's saying is this. Like, I saw that this guy was not getting utilized correctly. I knew if I bring him into the fold here, we are going to utilize him correctly. He still has the skill set. And so he can stand on the table and say, you know what? Hell yeah. I was right. And I think that's the whole premise behind
Doesn't it feel like that's the one he's got to be right about?
Yeah, he has to. He absolutely has to be right about David Johnson.
Man, Dave can't come out with 427 yards rushing next year. That can't be it. Not when Carlos Hyde put together what he did. And this offensive line is much better. Again, that one he's got to hit on. He absolutely does.
Text line is giving some examples here. Somebody,
that Randy Moss one wasn't bad.
Somebody said Randy Moss. Randy Moss, I don't know what his stats were, were in Oakland. I just remember him.
Yeah, he didn't.
But he wasn't Randy Moss then, but he got to New England and he was back to being Randy Moss.
Yeah, he got to a better coach, a better quarterback. He got to a better system, and he flourished and had one of the best years we've ever seen. I'm not going Randy. That's not what I'm asking. I think he can replicate 2018.
I don't want that. That's not good enough. 2018, David Johnson is not good enough. No, that's
Wade.
Not. That's not good. It's not better than Carlos Hyde. He's got to be
better than
that.
Carlos Hyde.
No. Carlos Hyde had
over 1,400 yards for scrimmage and 10 touchdowns? That's not better than Carlos Hyde?
No.
Somebody
Carlos Hyde had like 1,100 yards.
He had 1,023. I'm just throwing something out there.
Is that the actual number? You threw that out there real quick, show. I'm like, is that the real number?
As John McClain, who will be on with us tomorrow in the 4 o'clock hour, said, that young man couldn't catch a cold. He couldn't catch the ball. Man, this is 500 yards receiving. He had 1,072 yards, and he had 6 touchdowns.
How many times did they throw? I don't remember him dropping passes. I did play in the league for a long time, and I took a bunch of hits to the head, but I don't remember Carlos Hyde dropping passes.
He had 10 receptions and 16 targets for 42 yards.
I got hit a few times. Sorry about that.
If six of those targets that weren't caught were drops, then I got you. He can't catch a cold. But if they weren't drops, then that's not the case. They just didn't utilize him.
With this offense, if he got over 1,400 yards and double-digit touchdowns, I would take that in a heartbeat. I will take his 2018 season in a heartbeat. Wow.
Can you get rid of his average? Because the average yards per carry is killing me. 3.6.
That's killing you.
That's
somehow
killing me. Can we get him up to 4? Can we get him up to 4 yards?
We can get him wherever you want to.
Okay.
The big story coming out, the governor of Texas gave some great news that I think a lot of Houston fans will want to hear. We'll get into that next. Wade Smith, Ron, the show, Hughley in. with us. I want to get to some news that I believe the people want to hear. And Wade, this was reported by Field Yates earlier today, ESPN, that Texas Governor Greg Abbott has issued a revised order. Not only will professional sports leagues be allowed to resume play in June, but outdoor stadiums will be allowed, and listen to this, folks, to host fans up to 25% of their capacity. So there you go. Minute Maid, open up the roofs, NRG, potentially the chance for fans to be out there. That is from the governor, Greg Abbott, and I think a lot of people will take advantage of it, Wade. I think a lot of people will be excited to get out, and I don't know if it's safe or not, but I feel like a lot of people are just tired of being at home and want to get out. And I've been seeing people out and about in Houston. I've been seeing people out and about across the country. And if you start saying people can go to games, I think people are going to try to start go to games.
Hey, no question about it. You look at it, there's a bunch of college football teams in this state that, you know, you got Baylor and Texas.
Oh, I didn't even think about
Texas
college.
Yeah,
so right.
College football, they're going to be able to have fans there. And you started off at 25%. To me, and it's, what is it, May 28th or something like that? I mean, it's May 28th. So you got a lot of time until the actual season starts. So to me, he's kind of laying the groundwork to it's 25% now, but if as things keep phasing and if things keep improving, then it's probably might be 50 or 75% by the time you get to the actual season. And then that saves a bunch of universities. It saves organizations like the Texans. It's just a bunch of, and not even just them. I'm talking about like the Houston Dynamo. There's like a bunch of teams that will be able to generate revenue and people can go back to work as far as think about all the employees that work at these different.
That's what I was thinking.
I mean, there's a lot of people that's the thing about sports. People talk about sports and, hey, it's just a game.
All right, man.
But that game employs so many people, thousands and thousands and hundreds of thousands of people across the country have jobs because of sports. And so if you started at this 25%, by the time you get to the season, it's going to probably be closer to 75, 100%. And if that's the case, you just hope that it's done in a manner to where, you know, people, it's not something that ends up, we end up regretting it after it's over. What you hope is that things work out well and people can get back. Because at the end of the day, nobody wanted the pandemic to happen. Everybody wants to be able to get out and about. You just want to do it in a safe way. But people should be excited about the fact that it's starting, because I think a lot of people are going to go to games. I think a lot of people want to go, and I understand why they do. And if somebody said, hey, come to the Texans game, and it's at 25% capacity, I'm going to the game. But that's just me. But everybody doesn't feel like me. But I know that there's a significant amount of people that would want to go to the game.
Yep. J.J. Watt spoke yesterday, and there was one thing that we kept hearing about was, and this is what we've heard since Anthony Weaver spoke a couple weeks ago, but the talk was about, man, they're going to try to find ways to use J.J. Watt differently, find ways to have him be utilized in ways where you could take advantage of matchups or take advantage of his skill set. Man, you play the offensive line, you've blocked against cats that play the same position of J.J. Watt. What does that mean? What are ways that they can use J.J. Watt differently?
Well, you got to think about it. When you have a coordinator that is trying to figure out ways to get guys open, one-on-one opportunities, it's just like in other sports, in basketball, Reggie Miller is going to come off a double screen, or to bring it more modern times, Steph Curry is going to come off a double screen so they can get an open look at a three. There's stunts. There's ways that you can move your defensive lineman or bring linebackers in certain gaps to where it forces an offensive lineman to be one-on-one with J.J. Watt. Anytime that you have a situation, and there's not many offensive linemen where you say it's one-on-one with J.J. Watt and you say the advantages for the offensive lineman. And that's still to this day. Yeah. It's a very difficult matchup to block J.J. Watt one-on-one. And so defensive coordinators can figure out ways to move him around, to use stunts, to use blitzes, to get him one-on-one with the tight end, or get him one-on-one with the running back, or get him one-on-one with the an interior lineman or with the tackle, whatever it may be, as long as you can get J.J. one-on-one against the offensive lineman or offensive player, that's an advantage for him and it's an advantage for you as a defense. And so Anthony Weaver is one of those guys that's showing that he's going to be more risky, he's going to be more aggressive, he's going to be more creative. And so that being the case, now you're opening up more opportunities for J.J. Watt to get home. And when J.J. Watt gets home, that's forcing turnovers, that's forcing guys, teams to have to punt and getting the ball back into the hands of your offense that you're looking forward to actually leading the team.
I know the issues have been J.J.'s injuries. He's the last 3 years, he's missed a lot of time due to injuries. And so that probably, you would say, the number one reason has to do with the reason why he hasn't been mentioned amongst the names of Aaron Donald or Von Miller or anything like that great defense, just because of his injuries. But would you say, in staying with the thinking of using him differently, over the last several years, has he been used in a different way than he had been when he was real dominant? You know, those seasons when he's getting 20 sack seasons and he is clearly the best player in the league. I think me and Cecil were talking about it yesterday. Hell, one of them years he caught 5 touchdown passes, had 20 plus sacks, and he was in the MVP discussion, not just defensive. But has he been used differently now here lately as opposed to then?
Yeah, I think once he had some of those major injuries, especially his back injury, once that happens, it's more difficult for you to play on the interior and play with them goons down there. It gets real noisy when you're going against guards and centers, whether it's first, second, or third down. And so what you saw from the Texans is, let's put J.J. Watt on the outside so that he can see whatever help is coming, and so he'll be able to adjust for it, and he'll be able to rush the passer, but he can protect himself at the same time. It's harder to protect yourself when you're rushing from the interior. So there's been a change. It's not, I think, from what I've seen, there's been a change in the way that they have approached it. And part of it is because they want to protect them. And part of it is he wants to protect himself. Mm. Remember, I think it was 2 years ago, he had 16 sacks in a year. Most of that year, he was exclusively rushing from the outside. He made his hay from rush from the outside. So he could be productive in that way. But when he was at his best, J.J. was all over the place. And he was a terror on guards. Like, you would put him, line him up on a right guard, and it was going to be a long day at the office. I feel sorry for some of them boys sometimes because I've been there. I know what that's like to line up against somebody. He said, damn.
Who's the J.J. Watt you went up against? Who's the toughest interior D-tackle that you went up against?
Oh, that's a good question, man. J.J. Watt, J.J. is J.J., so mind you, any of these guys that I'm saying aren't quite as good as J.J. But, you know, playing against Richard Seymour on the interior when he was – lined up
so
as a three
strong.
Technique, he was a problem. He had a great ball get off. He was long. He's like 6'6", long, strong, explosive. That's tough to deal with, and he had a high motor. You know what I mean? A lot of times, guys that you wouldn't necessarily think that Richard Seymour would have a high motor. Dude had a high motor, so he was very tough to deal with. J.J. Watt on the interior, he has such a quick first step. People don't realize how when J.J. was at his best, his first step and his ability to redirect after that first step, you'll see so many guards falling on their face because they can't block him. Same thing with right tackles. He was very, very difficult to handle in those spots. Now he has to be a little bit more straight line. He has to be on the edge because he just can't handle that pounding that it takes when you're on the interior.
Yeah, when I think of J.J., and that's why I asked, has he been used differently? Because it felt like he did. Like, I know – the games that I happen to watch at the Tech, and I watch a lot of them because I'm a huge Deshaun Watson fan, but it would seem like he would just be on that, you know, right side against the right tackle. He would be on the left side of the defense. That was where he exclusively lined up. I just remember him being up and down the line of scrimmage. You would know he would be on the inside, rush from the outside, like, and it would just confuse defenses. That's why I just wonder offenses. That's why I just wondering. Like, it seemed to me that he exclusively just lined up on that one side. And we've heard about the creativity of Anthony Weaver, and I think they have guys. Like, you know, when you put out the opportunity to go with Whitney Watt, I really like Blacklock a lot, especially once he gets 8-10 games under him. the potential of that, and then the Jacob Martin kid. Like, you could put that – I think you got guys who can rush the passer to where you can maybe go back to moving him up and down the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, the thing about this defense is, and what you should be excited about, is that as the season goes on, they're going to get better. There's a lot of young new pieces that are going to be in the fold. You talk about Blacklock. You talk about Jacob Martin and what's my guy from Texas? I just lost the train of thought. Oh, Charles Amenihue.
Yeah.
You got guys like that that are going to be able to get after the quarterback, and they showed flashes last year. As they get, they keep moving forward and they keep progressing in Anthony Weaver's system, the defense is going to get better, and it's going to help out JJ, because as an offensive lineman, when there's one guy that you can focus on and say, I know we're going to slide our protection to JJ,
yeah,
and we'll be able to do work, we'll be able to handle everybody else one-on-one, you're going to have a field day protecting the passer. The problem is if Anthony Weaver is running all these exotic blitzes, he's finding out ways to get JJ one-on-one with the center, or one-on-one with the running back, or one-on-one with the tight end, because he knows the rules. And this is how, when you talk about being exotic, as a defensive coordinator, you have to understand the rules of the offensive line that you're playing against. When you understand their rules, you know how to game those rules to get the guy you want one-on-one with the guy that they don't want blocking, J.J. Watt. And so Anthony Weaver, being a former player, being as cerebral as he is, mm-hmm, being that type of guy, he's going to help the Texans get better in that regard, because he's going to be willing to take that risk. Because a lot of times when you're exotic like that, sometimes you're going to get burnt because of it. And so I would expect the Texans defense this year to give up more big plays than they gave in the past, but I also expect them to make more plays. So I'm excited to see what Anthony Weaver does with JJ and with the defense as a whole.
All right, text line and Wade Smith, you all are being ridiculous. All right, on the other side, Wade is texting me things during the show about David Johnson and the text line up and down, talking about there's one thing that Wade and many of you texters need to relinquish about David Johnson. Start to be fair to this kid. We'll get into that next. Clint Sterner out today. Wade Smith along with myself, Ron the Show Hughley. And as I said, we were talking about David Johnson, and it is clear to me people are just not going to be fair to this young man. And it starts with you, Wade. And I'm going to pull this out right now. This is what Wade Smith texted me during.
Yeah, let the people know what I said. Let them know what I said.
Knowing that I wanted to come back and touch this immediately, he comes and he goes, 10 plus mil a year. I need 1,650 total yards, man. 1,400 ain't going to get it done. Come on, man. Dude, I know. It's a bad deal money-wise for the Texans. David didn't do that. It's a bad money deal, and you should have got more out of the trade, it feels like, for DeAndre Hopkins. But that doesn't mean that we should now have crazy expectations for David Johnson. 1,400 ain't good enough. Everybody is clouding. I heard people talking about, oh, the fear of Carlos Hyde. What are we going to do? Oh, he's not going to be better than Carlos Hyde. Carlos Hyde had 1,100 yards of scrimmage. And you can't take 2018's 1,400 yards, 500 yards receiving almost, 940 yards rushing with 10 touchdowns. He scores touchdowns, double-digit touchdowns when he's being blocked by 7 caskets in front of him, not moving, nothing there, cereal boxes in front of him. 1,400 won't do it for you. Stop thinking about the money. It's not, all right, it's a bad deal. But he's like the third option on the team. And if your third option gets 1,400 yards and 10 touchdowns from scrimmage, you ought to be throwing a damn party. Have you done that here in Houston since Arian Foster? When has that happened last? All right, I know Lamar's had some good years, but my goodness. 1,400, and it's all because he's making $10 million. Oh, man.
Hold on now. So you put a lot out there. There's a lot of parts that I could run through.
I'm
but I, first of all, I got a cosign on the text line, and I'm going to read you what the text said. Mind you, I sent you a text. This is between me and you, right? And so my number was 1,650, right? Somebody else on the text line said, give me 1,100 to 1,200 yards rushing, and 500 yards receiving, and we're good to go with David Johnson. That makes the deal worth it. Now, I'm
not
a smart man.
I'm
not a smart man, but if I do an average of the numbers that he gave and then I do the number I gave, that's 1,650 yards. We had the exact same number of what it would take for the deal to be worth it, and I think that's fair. That's legit. He has the ability to have a year like that. And to me, from what I've heard from Bill O'Brien, the way he's spoken about and how highly he's spoken about David Johnson, they're going to utilize him to the degree that he will be able to hit those numbers. 1,400 ain't enough for me. I need him to hit those numbers. When somebody texts that, I text them back. Agreed. To me, that's right. We're on the same page, and we I don't even know who that texter is. I don't know that could be Joe Blow from the Alamo. I don't know
probably who that was. Probably Bridget. She's texting in just against me.
Bridget and I was on the same page. I didn't realize that.
She's against me, I believe. That's how I take it. come on, man. Though.
I'm just saying, it's nothing against David Johnson. Like, listen, when you make moves and people come in, there's certain expectations based off of what you're getting paid and what was given up to get you. So that's the – and also when you couple that with the way that the Texans – are saying, this is coming from the head man, that they're going to approach things, saying that David Johnson is a three-down back. We felt that he was going to improve our team, and he's going to be a three-down back that's a big-time player for us. Then that's the type of numbers that I need him to put up for me to say, yeah, that's a legit move. And the opportunity is there. Going back to what I said before, Bill O'Brien has a huge opportunity to stand on the table and say, I told y'all suckers. This is the perfect example, David Johnson. To me, 1,400 yards.
You're saying he can't get on the table and say
no. He can say
1,400 yards and 10 touchdowns.
No, the people are going to say, "Well, the 10 touchdown parts is that is important. That is important." But Carlos Hyde did have six. You know what I mean? And they never threw him the ball. They never threw him the ball. They didn't throw him the ball. So he didn't. David Johnson better catch 3 or 4 touchdown passes this year. He has it in him to do it. If he's utilized right, he'll do that. And then you can run for 6 or 7 more, and that's where you get your 10 from. You see what I'm saying? So to me, for it to make sense for you to take in a $10 million contract and trade away DeAndre Hopkins, and that's the piece you get back for you to say this is what makes it legitimately, he's got to produce.
See,
and he has it in him to produce.
You'd have just did it. You'd have just made it seem like that trade was straight up for Dave Johnson. It was not. They also got Ross Blacklock, and they got another pick for next year in the fourth round. All of that is it's all in that trade. I'm just saying, man.
But the Texans did trade away a pick as well, though.
They traded away. But okay. I'm just saying, all of that, the four, Ross Blacklock, and him, all of that is within that trade.
Yeah.
Listen, newsflash, folks. It ain't ever – like that thing ain't going to make sense to you. Okay? $10 million. I cannot believe they took on all his money.
But if he had that type of year, then it would say, hey, it makes sense. That's the type of production you get out of running back that gets paid that much money. So it proves it up and it makes sense.
But they brought him in, and how he's not – what option is he? Right? Like to me, you got Deshaun Watson, so that's one. They're a team that he can – as we talked earlier, you hope he runs the ball more. And he's a guy that is controlling the offense by throwing the football. They have Will Fuller, and they have Brandon Cooks. You done just told me up and down, and I'm agreeing with you. Cecil Schwartz said it yesterday. Clint has said it, that Duke Johnson's got to get more touches. So now you got Brandon Cooks, Will Fuller. Now you want Duke Johnson to get more touches, but you want this man to get 1,700 yards and 10 touchdowns to feel better. Like how many? I mean, they got a lot of Randall Cobb, not to mention. You got a real slot receiver now. I'm just saying, like, the money and the contract, like, they brought him in. That's never going to make sense. But just because he got paid that money don't mean that all of a sudden he jumped up to be the first or second option. They're going to try to get the ball, I would hope, to those receivers first. They're going to try to give it to Duke.
Everything that Bill O'Brien has shown since he's been here is that he wants to establish the run. He's going to run the ball, and he's going to utilize his running back. Every running back that he's had, Arians' first year here, even when Alfred Brewer was the starting running back, he got the ball a ton. Lamar Miller, he got a bunch of carries. They utilized him a ton. They did the same thing last year with Carlos Hyde. David Johnson is going to get his touches. He's the guy that I'm for certain is going to get his touches. And so in order for those touches to prove out and for the value of the deal to make sense, he's got to produce and get those yardage to back up with it. I know you're saying that, you know, Brandon Cooks is supposed to be the you know, the number one option.
I'm not even saying
Will Fuller, but the receivers in general. Yeah. I don't believe that that's how they're approaching this year. I think they're approaching this year is we're going to run the ball and then we're going to take what everybody gives you. And then we have a bunch of really good players on the outside. And so whoever is open is going to be a guy that can make plays. That's just basing it off of the way that Bill O'Brien does things as an offense. And Tim Kelly is going to take a page out of that book. They're going to run the ball. And they're not going to run the ball with Duke Johnson because they've shown that they don't want to run the ball with Duke Johnson. They're going to throw him the ball. So that means that the carries are going to go to David Johnson. He's going to have every opportunity to get his 1,100 yards rushing and 500 yards receiving. That just is what it is.
I don't know. I'm still trying to hope what Tim Kelly said is true. And Tim Kelly said, I'm going to play and try to run this offense through the eyes of my quarterback. And through the eyes of my quarterback, to me, as we said, Tim Kelly's running the show, then maybe there is a different thought process of not establishing the run as much as they did as establishing Deshaun Watson. And if that is the case, to me, it would scream that we're expecting a guy who is maybe the third option to produce at a level that you wouldn't normally want third options to produce. If he got 1,750 yards.
No, 1,650.
1,650. If he got 1,650.
100 total yards a game. That's what he's going to average.
And Deshaun is still eating. Then we got some kind of offense, right? You got something. And I know that's the dream, but I'm just trying to be realistic. I still think 1,400 yards and Deshaun Watson having a career year along with those weapons is something else, right?
That wasn't part of the caveat. We was talking about David Johnson alone and what's going to allow Bill O'Brien to stand on the table and say, I told you so. Now, he can just – if we're going person by person, 1,400 yards for David Johnson, what if Deshaun Watson doesn't have the career year? Is it worth it still then? Or does it have to be coupled with everybody else being successful?
No, but I just think if he doesn't have a – still, no matter what this offense is going to, I think, still run through Deshaun Watson, and I think that means that the touches aren't going to be there. I don't think the touches are going to be there enough for us to realistically say that David Johnson's going to reach that 1,650, 1,700 yards. They shouldn't. To me, if they're running the football at the rate, and I know they have an improved offensive line, but if they're running the football at the rate they did last year with Carlos Hyde, I think that's a problem. I think I think this team should be exploring more from four as the playmaker than opposed to the running back.
Well, I just look at it like this, Show. If you think about it, if you average 70 yards rushing a game and 35 yards receiving a game, you're at the 1,650 mark for a season. And to me, those aren't ridiculous numbers. 70 yards rushing and 35 yards receiving aren't ridiculous numbers.
Yeah, I mean, you're the number one or two option, I'm with you.
But I think he is. I mean, I think he's going to be. Deshaun, of course, is the man, and he's going to determine everything. But – they're going to feed David Johnson the ball, and they're going to work everything off of that. That's what I see.
I can't get out of here without getting this thought from you.
What's that?
This Major League Baseball. And I said, man, yesterday, I know we just heard from the governor speaking about being able to have 25% of attendance in stadiums in the state of Texas, and that would include Minute Maid Park. And I think people would love to be able to go to Minute Maid, to be able to watch it on TV, to watch the Houston Astros. But it looks like, and Max Scherzer, one of the guys who's big within Major League Baseball in terms of the Players Association, came out and let people know the real deal. I don't see how that is going to happen anytime soon with what the owners are offering and how the players are responding to this.
Yeah, I tell you what, man, listen. About a week ago, I was on with Landry and Lopez in the Loop, and it was talking about the fact that the players had a great opportunity here to come up with a compromise with the ownership and get on the field, get up back on the diamond so that people can see baseball, because everybody wants to see sports. They had a great opportunity to take advantage of the fact that they would be the only show on in town, and that's all over the country. They had an opportunity to potentially start the opening day on the 4th of July, Independence Day.
Perfect.
Just absolutely perfect. But I was making those thoughts and making those comments based off the fact that, you know what, the owners are going to be operating in good faith. They're going to put a legitimate proposal out there and say, you know what, fellas, hey, this is a bad situation. We're all in it together. Let's figure out a way, knock this out, and then let's go invest in the future of our league and then reap the benefits in the long run. Because in the short term, everybody's going to lose. But when I saw that proposal that the owners put out there, all I thought to myself is, well, they done lost their damn mind. They don't want to play this year, because there's no way in hell the players are going to accept to where certain players are going to miss out on 70, 60, 70, 80% of their contracts.
When they're playing half the game.
Like, are you kidding me? Like, think about that. That's just it's disrespectful. It was disconcerting. It was disrespectful to see that proposal. When I saw it, I said, you know what, the players don't even need to acknowledge that. They don't act like that somebody just leaked that and it wasn't a real proposal from the owners. Somebody came in and was like a superhero, like Loki on Guardians of the Galaxy, and he turned into another person and he put that proposal. It wasn't the real ownership group that put together that proposal. Listen. Bring your own proposal to the table. Put it out there, and that's what the Players Association is going to do, and tell them we'll play for this. And the proposal that the players need to put out there needs to be something that shows we're willing to lose money. We're going to just prorate our deals, and we're going to move forward like that. And to me, that's fair. You prorate your salaries, and then you go forward. If you play 50 games, you only get paid for 50 games. If you play 75, you only get paid for 75. That's fair. Any loss from profits from not having people in the stadium, that goes on the business. But at the end of the day, if they play, they're all going to win, because people are going to love Major League Baseball if they get out there and play. Right now, it doesn't look like this is going to happen. It's unfortunate.
Don't put that clapping stuff, Bridget. To hell with it.
I'm saying he said it perfectly.
They need to. I'm just saying,
Bridget. Don't listen to the show, man. If you agree with me, it's okay to agree with me.
I'm looking at Max Scherzer's tweet, and he went out and said, just like you said, Wade, we're not going to dignify that with a response.
Yeah.
And the first things that I see, and I'm going to call these people out by name. Oh, Jim James, the players are so greedy. They know nothing about hard work, blue collar work, or putting on anything every day. They're lazy, and it's sad. Frankie D, next. Great example for the kids. Nice work. All up and down. And when I look at this, the thing is, I thought is, the players are going to get blamed for this. Players are going to get blamed for this. And I'm like, dude, the owners are the one who should be taking an L. All right, everybody's going to have to take an L. But the owners should have to take. How the hell are we going to get to a place where the players are taking, what'd you say, 60, 70% of what their pay is? And you take the L on this one. I just think it's crazy. The last decade, and this was stat off ESPN, the last decade, players' contracts have gone up 40%. But the amount of worth for Major League Baseball teams in that same time frame has gone up 300%. The average lifespan for a Major League Baseball player is 5 years. These owners are going to own their teams forever and then pass it down to their kids. And they make hand over foot every year with their television deals, with their national television deals, with the ticket at the gate. And one year, you can't take the bigger hit. Right? Like, hell, the Texans are going to be in the McNair family forever. His late father passed it down to him. He'll probably pass it on to his kids. Like, they can't take the hit. It's just, it's insane. And the players are going to get blamed for it, just like in 94, when these owners are owning the team and make hand over foot for years upon years, and whenever they sell their franchises, they'll sell them for like $700 million more than they paid for it. But no, no, they want the players to take the bigger hit. It's absolutely insane to me.
Yeah, sure. I completely agree with you, man. I think everything that you said, you make a lot of valid points in those statements, because, listen, the NFL tried to get over on the players, and it worked. With the CBA, with them targeting the richer players and saying, you know what, we're going to separate the richer players from the not as rich players, and we're going to use that against them to divide and conquer. And Major League Baseball saw that and said, oh, we're going to try that same thing on this baseball union. And the baseball union looked at them like they was out their damn mind. And that's what they should have done. That's what the NFL Players Association should have did. But the Major League Baseball Association, Players Association said, like, you're not going to divide us. That's why Max Scherzer came out there and said, listen, we're not even going to dignify that offer. You cannot divide and conquer a union that powerful. It's just you just can't. And when you make the point that the owners, the various teams have appreciated in value 300%, but the players have been paid only 40% more, hey, that means that all of those profits, they've been reaping the benefits of whatever model they have in place. So if you have a model in place that's working, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. What you're telling me is you're being greedy. Because what they're trying to do with trying to do a 50-50 revenue share split is to basically do away with the model that's gotten them to the point where they've been up 300% and say, yeah, we want to get up to 400% over these next few years, and we're going to make the players look bad in the process, and we're going to have to pay them quite as much. It's just, listen, man, you just, the owners are, they overstep their bounds, and hopefully the fans aren't the ones that have to pay the price for it. And that's the problem I have, is because the fans want to watch baseball and see baseball, but you cannot logically say to yourself, the players should take this deal because it's a terrible deal. There's no fan that has a job right now that would take the deal that those guys are taking. It's just period. At your particular job, you're not going to go work that same job in the current climate. We have the opportunity of getting sick or getting hurt while you're on the job for 70% less of what you get paid. It's just not right.
Except for those that are lying and saying they play for free. 5 o'clock fire coming up next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.